I might be moving to Montana soon, just to raise me up a crop of dental floss. It's time for the Saftacast. I'm your host, Scott C. Hey, everybody, episode 29 is here, and it is in your ears. Welcome to the program. I'm your host. Hey, we got some stuff to talk about real quick here. Some of the news happening at the Sundress Academy for the Arts. Hey, folks, at the end of the month here, May 29th through May the 31st, it is the 2015 Fiction Writing Retreat at Sundress Academy for the Arts, Firefly Farms, just outside Knoxville, Tennessee. Now, I've spoken about this event before on the program, and I'm going to speak about it again right now to you. This is an event open to fiction writers of all styles, all levels. Maybe you're a published author, maybe you got a couple books under your belt, or maybe you're an undergrad, maybe you're just starting out in your career, whatever the case may be. This is an event that is up your alley, if you're a prose writer, that is. Sundress Academy is holding the Fiction Writers Retreat here at Firefly Farms. It is going to be a combination workshop, retreat, and camping experience from the weekend of May 29th through Sunday, May 31st. That is in just a couple of weeks right now. There is still time to get in on this action, though. This three-day, two-night camping retreat is going to be wonderful. Now, there is a focus on writing dystopian literature and historical fiction, but again, this is open to all styles, all genres, all specific subgenres of fiction writing. Come on and be a part of it. This weekend pass gets you instruction with amazing writers, including Megan Cass and Amy Sarah Baptista. Two great authors are going to be leading this one, but you also get writing supplies. You get food. You get drink. You get transportation from an airport. You know, that's if you're flying, you know. And all on-site amenities for one easy price. And maybe you've never camped before? No fear. There are tents, sleeping bags, and other equipment available for rental. Just ask. For information on this, as well as to purchase a reservation, the reservations are limited to only 15 people. There are still just a couple of slots available, so if you want to get in on this one, there's not much time left and there's not much room left, but you can get in on this. Go over to sundresspublications.com. Click on store, and at the bottom you'll see the Fiction Writing Retreat. You can click on that. You can get tickets. If you have questions, you can always shoot a message over to us at sundresspublications.com or find us on Facebook and shoot a message to us there and get all of your questions answered. Folks, you do not want to miss this one. I'll tell you right now, the host of this Saftacast will be there. Oh, yes, I will be. I'll be a part of it as well. Even though I'm not technically a fiction writer, I will still be a part of this because it is an event not to be missed. And don't forget, for those of you who are poets, there is a poetry writing retreat as well, and that's coming up in June. We'll talk about that on our next episode. Today, though, we can talk about some other things, including something else you can buy on the sundresspublications.com web store, and that is a limited 8-inch by 10-inch print of a piece of art by today's guests, Night of the Living Bread, painted by Chris Johnson, the original, and then he made scans and prints of it for this one. For this year's Biscuit Fest, it was part of our display downtown as part of the International Biscuit Festival. So if you want a nice print of a piece of bread going after a bacon that is running in terror and an egg that has died, trust me, it's so much better than I could possibly describe it. Head on over to the sundresspublications.com and click on store, and there it is. Night of the Living Bread, limited edition, hand-numbered prints by Chris Johnson. Now let's talk about Chris Johnson's episode here, because he is our guest on the program today. SAFTA's visual arts coordinator, we were honored to have him on this program, and we recorded it live here at Firefly Farms, which brings up a very interesting point. We're a little bit logy and a little bit kind of slap-happy at the start of the episode, and, well, a little bit later on as well, and there are constant references to sausage. There's a reason for that. See, when we got together to do this episode, we did not expect there to suddenly be a spontaneous bratwurst and sausage festival at the farm that night for dinner, and it was the kind of bratwurst and sausage that makes your mouth happy, your esophagus happy, your stomach happy, your entire digestive tract happy. And then that translates into your neurological system, made it happy. So we were quite full on sausage and bratwurst and good times and good merriment. And I think that translates well into this episode. But it's not just being goofy about sausage and everything. No, actually, Chris has some deep, penetrating thoughts to talk about when it comes to art and what the meaning of art is and what we as consumers of art should really do. What should art do for us and what should we do for art? I encourage you, check out his print at the sundresspublications.com web store, as well as keep an eye out for his other work as it comes about. It's going to be good, and we know you're going to enjoy this episode, so let's just shut me up and get this going with episode 29. But first, as always, I got a little bit of theme music for you. It's pretty awesome, though. All right. Anyway, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, brother?
How you doing, man?
Waking up after sausage coma.
Yeah, we just came from sausage, spontaneous sausage fest here at the farm with awesome.
I stuffed.
Yeah. So I start off every interview by asking the burning question that is on everyone's mind. You ready?
Oh.
Hypothetically speaking, how many pool balls do you think you could fit in your mouth?
Is this before or after my accident?
I don't know. Whichever you choose, you know?
I'm going to say two.
Two? Think so?
Maybe.
I can only get about a quarter of one. I got a small mouth.
Well, it's kind of like regulation tables versus, you know, pay-to-plays. You got wider pockets.
Snooker balls would be different, too. You know.
Last time I picked up a snooker.
Jimmy Superfly snooker ball. At least one of us isn't drunk in this one. So, anyway, Chris, you are here, and it is awesome to have you on the show. Indeed, you know, we already said that, but you know, we got to get this interview going some direction or whatever, because it's very free flowing. We don't know where we're going to go. We just let it run. So let me just start here then. How the hell did you get to be with us here in SAFTA? You're the Viz Arts Director. I'm curious. I don't know your origin story. I just showed up one day, and it's like, oh, this is Chris, by the way.
I met Joe and Aaron probably about 7 years ago at a little dive bar called Roger's Place, where I was hanging out with everybody, and our groups intertwined. Fast forward a couple of years, and they actually tapped me to be Visual Arts Director. I declined it for probably about a year because I didn't think I could do it, and then finally one day, they hit me up, and I took it.
Why did you think you couldn't do it?
Have you seen these people?
Fair enough.
Man, like, I was just at that point. Like, I didn't really believe in myself that much, and then all of a sudden, I was like, okay, you know, I might as well have fun with it. I might as well do what I love to do.
There you go. And I mean, you've done pretty well with it, you know. You've been talking to your art career's like, taken off again.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
New prints, everything else.
You just ran
we
your
got
first set
Biscuit
of prints.
Fest tomorrow.
Yeah, Biscuit Fest this weekend. You just ran your first set of prints?
Yeah, doing a new set of prints after that next couple weeks. So.
Of the same thing?
No.
Zombie, bacon, and egg?
New prints.
New prints?
New prints.
Brand new one that you're working on?
Actual digital prints this time.
Like made in Illustrator type of thing?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Oh, I've been having fun with it all day.
So are you going to start like a store or a web store for it all?
Oh, yeah. Trying to start up a Etsy shop. Etsy, I hear it said like 12 different ways. Etsy shop, setting up my own website, and everything else. So.
Making a couple bucks off of it, you know?
Hopefully.
It's like this, is this a new thing for you to make money off the art, or?
Kind of. I'm not used to setting my prices in like multiple $100 range.
Does it surprise you? Like,
yeah.
To come into this? Because now I'm curious, where does it all begin with you? The art-wise, because I'm not a visual artist.
Yeah.
I never trained my brain to work that way.
That's what's really killing me about it. Like, whenever it comes to visual arts and SAFTA, like, we have photographers and everything else, but I'm the only person who actually does paint all the time. And I came in here at the first, and all of a sudden there's all these poets and writers and everything else, and I always wanted to be a poet and be a writer, but I do art, like, visual.
Yeah.
So it's like this symbiotic relationship where everybody's like feeding off each other, and I'm just not used to it. And being one of the only visual arts people, it kind of freaks me out sometimes.
Why is that?
I'm just not used to it. Like being in here with a bunch of poets and writers and being the only visual arts person and actually having to set everything up, you're just like, what do I do?
Do you feel ostracized?
No, no, not at all. I mean, like, I found my tribe finally.
They just happened to not be the tribe I thought it was going to be.
It's just like, I found my tribe, and we all mesh really well. It's just like, whenever I come to somebody with an idea, and I'm like, holy crap, you know, just imagine if Lemmy Klemister looked at Jesus, and he said, you know, we're going to make that velociraptor look like a chicken one day.
Okay.
Nobody really gets it. And some people do.
I'm not picturing this, really. You know, if God Lemmy, you know, looked down at his son and was like, "I'm gonna make this velociraptor look like it." I can't even do a good Lemmy voice.
Well, you know.
I think only Lemmy can do Lemmy at this point.
I can only do Winston Churchill after all that sausage.
Never have so many eaten so much for so little.
But no, it's like, coming into all this, Aaron and Joe's vision. Whenever they actually tapped me for everything, being visual arts director, whenever I finally took it, I took it very seriously, and it really made me turn a corner in my life, and I finally realized what I was capable of, everything that I thought I was capable of but wouldn't let myself become.
It brought you self-confidence?
Yeah, pretty much. But after I took it, everything started changing, and now that I'm looking at it, I mean, like, Gracie and Bonnie, like, my intern and my assistant, two of the most amazing people in my life. I mean, like, they help out more than they know. Shout out to Bonnie. Shout out to Gracie. You guys are the shit. But, I mean, just seeing all these people come into the arts and everything else, I never had that as a kid. You know? Like, I think that's where I come from.
What did you have as a kid? In that respect. This is probably a loaded question.
No. Like, I was always that kid that traveled the train tracks next to my grandparents' house over in Chrisenberry. I'd watch the graffiti trains, everything else. I mean, I'd bench all day long just looking at trains, looking at all the different pieces on the side of it. And my mom, she was a graphic designer. My dad, he was working in print business for AB Dick. And I started learning about all this graphic design and everything else. And I mean, it's stuff that I wasn't getting in school because it was PAL. I mean, like, we were three stoplights and maybe a couple of cows at that point back in the 80s. And I mean, it just opened up a whole new world for me. And then fast forward 10 years and next thing you know, I taught myself how to draw. And fast forward another 10 years and I'm an art director.
What was it about the trains? Like, the graffiti?
Oh,
because it's a very specialized art form.
Oh, it's not just a specialized art form. Like, it is extremely hard to control a spray can. Whenever you start getting into, like, big spectrum drawings, like, let's say you've got a 60 by 80 wall, and you've got one can of spray paint, you start going crazy on it. Narrow that down. If you're on a pad of paper and you're doing an 8x10-inch piece, it's almost the equivalent of using a pencil. Like, that's what people don't understand. But some of these guys and girls are just coming in with all these sick ideas that art schools don't want to teach. They don't want to further. They're like, okay, you know, you come from a crazy background. You've got this under your belt and this under your belt, and that's good, but you can't afford tuition. That's a lot of what graffiti comes from. I mean, it's a lot of people telling you, you can't do this, you can't make it.
It's born out of rebellion.
Yeah. Then. Not just that. I mean, like, a couple of people who just never really had anything, or they think that's the only way that they're going to be able to make it. Like, symptom of society that they were born into. But, like, you take Shepherd Fairey. Shepherd Fairey gets a lot of crap.
Okay.
Especially from the graffiti community. But, I mean, he had his start just like everybody else. I mean, he was actually in design school. He was in an art college whenever he started his Andre the Giant stickers with Obey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take people like Banksy. I mean, some of his installation pieces are fucking sick. But
like,
then,
like, what ones?
The telephone booth with the hatchet?
Yes, yeah. I think I know the one you're talking about.
Like,
yeah.
He was actually main focus, or one of the main focuses on Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Yeah.
But, like, back in the 80s, I was growing up on Wild Style, the movie.
I know the film you're talking about, yeah.
Exactly. So you're just sitting here, like, watching all these old school rappers with wide eyes, and you're like, holy crap, I could do this.
Was the graffiti scene really that big in Middle Tennessee?
I'm gonna say yes and no.
Explain. And you can speak up a little bit if you want to. Kind of low.
Whenever it comes to Knoxville, Tennessee, we're a hub town. Like, we're halfway between the Carolinas, and then you've got Atlanta down there. You've got Mississippi. You've got Chattanooga, Memphis.
Lexington to the north. Yeah, Louisville
exactly.
to the north. Cincinnati.
I mean, like,
yeah.
We are basically a hub town whenever it comes to transportation. And then you have, like, all your transient train punks and everything else. You've got all this other stuff. And, I mean, it's a vibrant culture, but nobody really knew how to harness it. And then you start getting all these people coming around, like Mine, Banner, Lime, Grifter, Mesco, Coda. I mean, the list goes on and on. But, I mean, if you walk down any of these back alleys, I mean, there's places that have been torn down for years that I really wish the public could see nowadays, you know?
There's something more liberating and freedom, it sounds like, in the graffiti culture.
Like, whenever it comes to the scene, I mean, like, whenever I started out, my first piece, I was terrified, you know? Like, I'm sitting here staring at a wall. I snuck out of the house whenever I was, like, 13, and I had a couple cans of spray paint. And I started trying to come up with my own style down the road. And I mean, in Powell, down the road means, like, you know, a mile. I started on this bridge. And after I started on it, I got halfway done. I start looking at over my shoulder. And I'm like, oh, crap, my dad's there. I know my dad's there. I'm going to get grounded. I'm screwed. But, like, yeah, it's freedom.
There's a freedom and a sense of liberty. Is there a sense of, like, inclusiveness in the community?
Kind of depends. I mean, like, whenever it comes to inclusiveness, I never got a chance to really paint with a lot of people. It was always solo work. And I recently started talking. Somebody that I care about deeply actually just introduced me to an 11-year-old kid, for all intents and purposes, named Pei.
Okay.
And whenever he hit me up, he was like, hey, I heard you were doing graffiti back in the day, you know? Like, do you know these people and these people? I'm 32 years old. I mean, like, you don't meet a lot of writers who are 32 years old and are either A, still in the game, or B, still around. And this 11-year-old kid starts hitting me up, and it was amazing. It was like, this is me back in the day.
But you know? You didn't have that, so you didn't have those people to look to and go, okay, so, like, how do I do this technique? You know, how do I do this particular blend move, or whatever it may be?
And I mean, like, I was growing up on, like, Bob Ross. I was growing up on not even YouTube videos. Like, I was going out to public libraries looking up pictures of, like, Dutch masters to, like, graffiti cutouts on newspapers.
Like, basically, you're sponging everything.
Yeah, just trying to get some kind of artistic education where I wasn't getting it in general school. And then...
And now you're one of the older masters, so to speak.
Honestly, I'm not even a master. I mean, like, I'm still, you know, learning. And
so it's kind
great.
Of like a who the fuck am I to say this?
Every single day.
To help you.
That's the way everybody should look at life, man.
Who the fuck, like, am I?
I mean, whenever he hit me up, we were sitting there talking, and we decided we were going to do a canvas trade. And I did a 16 by 20 for him, and he did a 16 by 20 for me. And it meant the world to me, and it still does. It's hanging up in my house.
Mm.
And, I mean, whenever we traded it off, we decided, hey, what are your favorite spots in Knoxville to look at graffiti?
Mm.
What are my favorite spots? Like, let's make this mesh. Like, you show me your places, I'll show you mine.
Okay.
This kid schooled me! I mean, like, him, his brother, his dad, I mean, they're amazing. They really are. I mean, like, the fact that I can sit there and talk to them about nothing but, like, nerddom, graffiti,
art, nerddom,
art
yeah.
anything. No. I'm talking, like, straight up Dungeons and Dragons, like, everything else. I mean, like, we're just talking life and getting along with people. But actually getting that kind of camaraderie that I never really had.
Has the art scene in Knoxville changed since you were a child?
Oh, yeah.
The way you're talking here, it does sound like it. How has it changed?
Oh, yeah. Whenever I was growing up in Powell, we didn't have First Fridays. Like, my mom, she'd sit there and she'd teach me about art. Like, she'd show me different artists that she thought I'd be interested in. She's the reason I love Cynthia Markard. Like, her work, oh, so amazing. But I mean, just local artists, everything else. We'd go out to, like, Jacob's Building for Esau's and set up with my family. And I'd find different local artists, but it'd always be, like, carpenters. And as it should be, you know, that's definitely a really good part of art. But you never really got the painting aspect. It was always, like, happy names and stuff like that. I never really got into the city a lot. So whenever you're not getting into the city a lot, you're not really connecting with your local society and everything else. And then you just hit this point where you don't really connect with the people you're around. That was 90s. So, like, there weren't a lot of galleries that I could actually get around to. And then a lot of the people that I knew in the art scene back then, we were all small names. And then all of a sudden, come 2000s, we're starting to get gallery shows. Everybody starts moving off, going to Atlanta, California. My friend Mikey went down to Disney, actually started going through Disney Drawing School. And I mean, it just kills me. Like, we were the kids who had to teach ourselves.
So there was no art scene basically when you were a child, but now it exploded, and suddenly, you know, all that hard work in a way is paying off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, there was an art scene, but we just didn't know how to get into it, because we were always outsiders.
And now you guys are the inside.
Debatable.
Okay, debatable. Depends on which side of the blue line you're on. Yeah, that's sort of thing. What's been the best thing, though, in the last few years, let's say? Like, in the last 5 years, what's been the best thing about the art scene blossoming here in Knoxville?
Like, going to First Fridays and actually watching people walk around the town, drinks in hand, legal, not legal, debatable, but people actually showing camaraderie, you know? Like, coming out to shows that they never thought they would. And it's not just for the alcohol. It's not just to say they were out at an art show.
It's, like, to actually see the art.
I sold a couple pieces one night whenever I was in Gallery 133, and it was one of the first times that I'd actually painted something and put it up in the public setting. And they looked at me and they were like, "You're the only reason I came in. Like, I saw your piece and it just spoke to me." I'm like, "You realize that right now I still don't know who I am? Like, I'm trying to find that on canvas?" But, I mean, you don't tell them that. You just look at them and you're like, "Dude, that's amazing." And that's the way you feel, but at the same time, you don't tell them the rest of it. But, I mean, just, it's addictive.
What's addictive about it? Because, again, I'm not a visual arts person, but help me and help us to understand.
It's kind of like whenever you walk into a poetry reading and you see that one cat in the corner and you just know they got that piece in them that's going to tear you apart. But it's going to be that one cathartic piece. It's just like, holy crap, that is the piece of my life that's missing.
So is it like a drug in a way, then? You're chasing that piece all the time?
For me, art's catharsis. I mean, like, it's, some days it's trying to find the right lines. Most days it's trying to get my own demons out of my head. Kind of depends. There's a lot of art that I will not show anybody on this planet. But, like, art saves more than anybody knows. And I'm not going to go into my backstory or anything else, but I will tell you right now that art is one of the most, I don't care if it's writing, poetry, carpentry, if you like welding, anything else. I mean, doing podcasts. Dude, art saves everything.
And you truly believe that?
Oh, I've seen it happen more than you know. Like, that's one of the biggest reasons I fell in love with graffiti. Like, I was a horrible, horrible place in my life. And, like, whenever I was benching and watching trains, I mean, it just clicked. And for other people that I know, you know, like, they started writing poetry, and then next thing you know, they go to a local slam or start sending off to syndicated presses and stuff like that. And they start getting published. Carpenters that I've known for ages, like, they're sitting here selling artistic pieces that are actually carpentry pieces. Potters, sculptors, I mean, you name it. It's your own energy coming out of you, and it's not sitting there in a 9-to-5 job hating your life.
Now I'm thinking in terms of that. Art says, can anyone do art?
In all honesty, I believe they can. I mean, whenever I was growing up, my art teachers, they were those people that got into it and actually knew what they wanted to do with their life, but they never really did it. So they got jaded. And they just kind of looked down on people who couldn't make a perfect line or anything else. So I always felt bad about it, like just making stick figures. Then I met this kid named Justin Bass in fourth grade, and he was drawing like all these amazing helicopters and everything else. And I was like, holy shit. You know, like, I always wanted to be, like, I wanted to be three things whenever I was a kid. I wanted to be an engineer. I'm terrible at math, so that fell through. I wanted to be an artist. Hopefully that sticks around. And I wanted to be an astronaut.
What kid doesn't want to be an astronaut?
Oh, no, man. I'm still a space cadet.
Man, I'm higher than the moon.
I started just getting every single book I could from the library, not just the how you draw books from back in the 80s. It was, you know, all the masters. It was figuring out contemporary versus, you know, like all these other aspects of art. And in doing so and giving yourself your own art education, what speaks to you rather than what your teachers can teach you. Like, the one thing that I'll tell anybody, get weird with it. Like, take your easel outside. Get a couple of cans of spray paint, cup of coffee if you feel like doing stains, if whatever your medium is. Just don't be afraid to ruin a couple canvases. Put a little bit of titanium white over it if you don't like it. There's always another chance to make more art. I mean, like, I spent most of my life being horrendously closed off and not giving in to what I wanted to do artistically. And then I moved into my new place, and I just started getting weird with it again.
Just like, going crazy with it.
Yeah. Like, my roommate / landlord came outside earlier, and we were talking, and he was like, dude, you know, I honestly haven't seen you this happy in probably about 6 years.
So in a sense, art has saved you yet again.
Oh, yeah. I know probably about 20 people that I can definitely name off the top of my head. I mean, everybody from drug addicts to people who didn't know what was going on in their life and they just wanted to die. People that genuinely hurt. People that just never got a chance to speak up because they were never spoken to.
Or people that just don't even know who they are or
yeah.
what they are and they discover something.
Yeah. I mean, like, here lately, I picked up a tremor in my right hand and I got diagnosed with glaucoma last year. And I really worry about my art career. But that's what pushed me back. I started doubting it. And I sat down one day. Like, I took probably about 3 or 4 months off freaking out about it. And I sat down one night and I just started doodling. Like, letting my hand go over the page, however it felt. Started connecting lines. And then next thing you know, I came up with that series of smoke paintings. You and Tiff bought one.
Yeah. Yeah, we got one. You know, it's coming home with us from here, you know. Big ass one, too.
Yeah.
I think the biggest one you've done. It's like 3 foot by 4 feet.
It's honestly rival with one that's hanging outside.
Mm.
I think it might be a little bit larger.
Okay.
But holy crap, man.
See, I didn't even... I'm looking at it now. Maybe we could post a photo of it on the site here so people can know what we're talking about here. I didn't see it as smoke. I saw it as more like just a fluid, almost.
And that's actually the way I was going with it. Like, whenever... I actually left that out of the conversation earlier. Whenever I was growing up, I was obsessed with smoke. Like, just trying to capture it on paper. And then I started thinking about it in a graffiti aspect. And I was always obsessed with anatomy and everything else. And all of a sudden, my hands started tracing, like, just its own lines. And over the years, I just started doing a whitewash and then coming in with a couple of lines. And next thing you know, it just transformed into that. I mean, that's my catharsis.
I'm not arguing with it. I mean, I think it's beautiful.
I just didn't know.
Smoke. But that's the beauty of the thing.
It's not just that.
It's the beauty of art interpretation.
It's vein work. It's basically just my mind wandering. And one of the best things that I'll ever say about buying art is whenever you're buying art, you're buying not only somebody's time and effort, but you're also buying parts of them. Little chunks. Whether it's pieces of time, you know, a divorce, a bad day at the office, you know, like somebody's dog shit on my lawn, like taking out aggression, or you're buying the best day of their life. You're buying, holy crap, I believe in this.
You're buying a piece of their life.
Exactly. It's like buying a book, you know? I mean,
a used book, at least. Yeah, that sense, yeah. You know?
Actually, that's a really good way to describe art. You're buying a used book.
I'll give that one to you. Permission to use that.
No, but, I mean, whenever it comes down to it, like, people don't really realize that. They just... they automatically see a drawing or something else, and they're like, somebody pounds that out in like an hour and a half, and then they're on to something else. Why are they charging $200?
Are you pissed at the people who just collect art just because, oh, I want things to hang on the wall?
Not really. At least they want something to hang on the wall. With me, my walls were bare for probably about 5 years because I was moved around so much, and I just never really collected a lot. Nowadays, like, I've got a... Kitty Brooks, Whitney Crow piece. I've got two or three pieces that I've done that mean the world to me that I'll never sell. And Hag Cult, M. Furstner, like, amazing artist. But I used to always get ticked off whenever people would buy pieces and they just didn't really understand it. It was like, hey, that's cute. But now that I look at it, I'm like, okay, you know, at least you're thinking about it. At least it even partially resonates. You know,
something like, triggered them.
You're not just jumping on some kind of train and being like, okay, you know, I'm hanging this on my wall because there's a name at the bottom.
So that's the kind of art collector that annoys you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to own this because it was a Picasso.
I gotta admit, I'm kind of jealous of Picasso for selling that one for like 179 fucking mil. I mean, good lord.
Well, I mean, truth is that, you know, he used to go, you know, stories are that he would go into a bar... and he wouldn't be able to pay his bar tab, so he would doodle something on a napkin and be like, here's an original Picasso. And that's how he pays his bar tab that night.
And that's why I can't drink at bars anymore.
He's dead. You know? So it's just owning something for the name on it rather than...
exactly.
It says something to you.
Like, I'm not going to say I disrespect people like that. Like, at least they're still supporting art. They're trying to put across something for... they're trying to own a piece of art to actually have social status rather than a meaning.
Okay. So it's less about... it's about status versus meaning.
Yeah.
Or style versus substance, in a way.
It's like people that go around trying to, you know, take out bricks from a Banksy painting and, like, sell them on eBay and shit like that.
Rather than take a photograph of it and look at it and think about it.
No joke. Art should disturb you. Art should make you uncomfortable or comfort you. Art should make you feel.
That's a way of
putting it. If it's poetry or anything else. I mean, like, any creative aspect should make you feel something deep down.
Either visually something or emotionless. It should trigger some kind of response within you.
Exactly. It's one reason I couldn't get pissed off at, well... pun intended on that one. I can't get pissed off at, like, Piss Christ or, you know, Elephant Dung Mary. Because, I mean, it actually genuinely made people feel something. Either outrage or, you know, hey, this is a social commentary on religion. Or it just got people thinking.
It got them talking about something.
Exactly. Rather than the weather. How was your day?
Rather than small talk. It got people thinking about something or talking about something, at least.
And I gotta admit, even myself, I got caught up in that for a long time.
Discussing its merits and worth, makes sense to me. Yeah. So what's hot right now in the art world?
Depends on who you ask.
Oh, I'm asking you. What do you see right now as like a hot thing going on right now in the art world?
In my personal art world? That is a very large question.
Okay, let's change it. What's hot right now for you in your art? Like, what do you find yourself doing a lot of right now? Like, Picasso and his blue period. You know, and those things, you know, we talk about those things. What's your period right now?
I always wish that I had, like, a blue period. for once in my life, I've actually got a little bit of focus and everything else, so I'm really starting to get into prints and everything else, like actually doing runs of stuff rather than, hey, guess what? It's a dragon with a rocket pack coming out of its butthole! Because, I mean, like, I've got it.
If you did that painting, please make that the title. Dragon with rocket coming out of butthole.
I'll do it in French and charge an extra $100.
There you go. Les dragons.
Les dragons. Pouf faire.
Do you see yourself entering like a particular motif right now?
Like, right now, I'm actually trying to get back to what I like to do, which is, I always wanted to be an animator and everything else, like, so I started doing hard lines and, like, thick outlines, a little bit of a bubble background, just getting back to my roots, you know? I started doing this zombie series after Biscuit Fest, like, it kind of drove me back to it, my love for horror, and I've got two pieces on pallet boards right now. And I actually started doing a lot more smoke paintings, or what I'm quote-unquote calling smoke paintings. Basically just free-flow stuff. And recently I started back on Illustrator, and these new prints, oh my god. Like, I cannot wait to see where they go.
Yeah, before the show you previewed a couple of them to me to see what you were working on. It's like, holy shit.
It's so weird. Like, I can go outside on a canvas and just screw everything up with spray paint. I'm so used to it. But getting back into the digital world after like 5-6 years of not having Photoshop or Illustrator or Lightroom or anything else. I mean, right now, I'm kind of like this neophyte baby, like crawling around in a crib being like, oh, crap.
Wait a minute.
What do I do? All these people are standing over me in the art world.
But now you have YouTube tutorials or things. Like, oh crap. It's like, I know how to.
Where was this shit when I was a kid?
Yeah. YouTube is now the how-to set of the world for everything.
Like, whenever I first learned Photoshop, it was my mom on like an 80s style Macintosh. Like, whenever you used to have like two games, it was Reader Rabbit and Oregon Trail. That was
Apple
about
IIe system.
The only thing. And she basically used that for, like, at homework stuff. But, like, I mean, we had a lot of fun on it, but it's changed so much over the years, and you're having to get used to, like, vector work and everything else, and, like, getting back into the scene, going digital, it's a whole new animal.
I'm not gonna say, I can't ask the question as which do you prefer, you know, working digitally or analog, because you're just getting back to digital.
I like both, but I like actually doing a painting, scanning it in, and then messing around with stuff. It makes it a little more interesting. But if I'm doing prints, I really like to use Illustrator and Photoshop. Makes it a lot easier. Colors don't get screwed up. If I'm doing a gallery piece, always going to be paint. More than likely spray paint. You'll pry it from my cold, dead hand, sir.
you work with what you work best with, you know? What you're happiest with. Because art should make you happy.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of people get it wrong. And I'm not even going to say wrong. They just get misguided, misinformed. Society either told them, you know, hey, those lines are wrong, or you should feel bad about this because it's not Picasso, or it's not Renoir, it's not Van Gogh. I mean, like, some of the best drawings I see come from children because they haven't been taught to fear what they're putting down on paper.
They've got imagination.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is where you will see a dinosaur, like, with a robot jetpack on it.
Exactly. And, I mean, like, I look at my nephew, I look at all these kids, like, whenever I see Pei's work, everything tying in, and you're just like, holy crap, you are so hungry. I know people in the art world that are just so miserable trying to be the next Picasso. Why are you not you?
Why?
You know, like, one of the best things that I ever heard said in life was by Rabbi Zusia, and it was, paraphrasing right now, whenever I die, they're not going to ask me, you know, why were you not God? It's like, why were you not Zusia? And it's like, be yourself. Don't be afraid to be weird.
Get messy with it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, like, if your passion is to go outside and just, like, watch Cutie and the Boxer.
Mm.
I mean, on Netflix right now. Like, go home, or if you're at home, turn on Netflix while you're listening to this and look up Cutie and the Boxer. this guy, I mean, like, yeah, sometimes he can be a horrendous asshole, but he's got, like, boxing gloves on with a couple of sponges, and he's going crazy on these huge canvases. And yeah, he's sold for millions in New York, but he's doing what he likes, you know? And I mean, yeah, he drove himself crazy doing it. Most of us do.
In one form or another, yeah.
Art's 60% exorcism and 40% exercise. But, like, doing what you love. And his wife in that. And one of the most beautiful parts of the story is that she actually comes to terms with everything that's going on. And she learns how to stand up to him because of that. And show him that she's an equal. And, I mean, it actually makes him look at his life and realize what's going on.
Art saves again.
Exactly. Art is the new Jesus.
But art can also destroy, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When we look at people like Pollock,
yeah,
destroys him. I mean,
there's a certain destructive aspect that needs to be addressed in art. I mean, it's what parts of myself do I not like? What parts of myself do I like? What parts can I take? And what's happened to me in my life that I can't? And some people go over the edge. Hell.
So is that
I have.
I won't
multiple
ask.
Times.
But is that how you stop yourself then from destruction? Like, where's how do you prevent that destruction?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Every day is a new day.
So sometimes, I mean, the demons win.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I mean, every day is a new G.I. Joe battle. Some days Cobra comes in, kicks the shit out of you. Some days you're sitting there being Duke. And you're knuckling up for America, you know.
I've never heard it put so beautifully
or so cheesily.
I'm not being sarcastic,
but it's like, I mean, whenever I look at a piece, I don't see right or wrong or anything else. I just see, like, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and it got really deep. I mean, this was like a 9-hour art conversation while imbibing free alcohol, but like, we got trashed and we started talking about art. And they looked at me and they were like, okay, you know, like, what do you do? Like, whenever you've got a canvas sitting around for 2 or 3 months and you just don't know what to do, you've got artistic constipation and you're looking to pass the flow. And I told them, I was like, man, whenever I look at a painting or whenever I pick up a canvas, I'm not saying, you know, I do the whole carpenter thing where you feel out the piece of wood and you're like, oh, you're going to be gorgeous. Like, I pick up canvas and I take it back to the house and I look at it and I'm like, okay, like, at the factory they put on gesso, you got the grain, everything else, like, what do I see? And then I stop myself whenever I ask myself, what do I see? And I'm like, what do you want to be? I'm taking me out of this. Like, what do you want to be?
You tell me.
Exactly.
Like the canvas, you know, you're exactly. Saying that, you tell me what you're gonna be.
Art's a conversation. Whether you realize it or not. I mean, every time I go to a gallery and I'm just like, first time I ever saw Van Gogh in person, oh my God, instant art boner. And I'm just sitting here like, I'm going to be that guy that gets arrested for trying to touch this thing. But I mean, like, just that interaction. It's a love story. It's a love-hate relationship. It's all those bad nights where you're trying to hit on somebody. It's all the good nights where you're just living life and making money and, you know, like, having the lawn and the kids and everything else. I mean, like, it's always a story. And a lot of people don't get that.
I was going to tell you one thing. So you're making me feel better about my own childhood now, in a way. Because I'm not kidding. When I was in kindergarten, they sent a note home to my parents saying, Scott refuses to color in the lines.
Okay. Do we have a pen?
There are many around here. There are many, yes. And there's
okay.
Paper.
Ooh,
well.
Ooh.
There's paper.
For those of you not able to see this,
which is all of you, Chris actually has just found a set of...
Ooh. I'm putting the greens right on the mic.
He just found a set of colored pens.
All right.
Yes.
Scott?
Okay. Yeah?
I'm going to do one thing.
Okay, what are you going to do?
Hand me a piece of paper.
All right, I will find you a piece of paper here. It's time for free art lessons on the Sapticast. For those of you following at home, you can't see any of this.
All right, we're going to have, let's say, this.
Okay.
Let's say this represents every single thing that you ever had to color as a child.
Okay, this little rectangle here. Okay.
Everybody told you not to go out of the lines.
Right.
You're a grown-ass man. I'm a grown-ass man. Color outside the lines.
I will do
Have
that.
Have fun with it, man.
I will do that. You keep talking about philosophy here.
I was the same way. Like, fourth grade, we were having this project, and it was, you know, the 50 nifty United States, blah, 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 sing the song. I know you're doing it. There was this girl, but she started looking at me like, oh my god, Chris is having so much fun. You know, like, why is he coloring out of the lines? I mean, like, and I understand that now that she was actually taught not to color out of the lines. Like, don't, you know, upset the boat. You know, this has to be this way to look this way. You know, it has to look pretty. Hmm. Art doesn't have to look pretty.
I'm glad to hear that, because, like, you know, I do have, again, I never was, I'm not saying that I can't draw or anything, but I never trained my brain to think that way, visually, so it's very difficult for me to, I mean, other forms of art, yeah, I'm capable of, but I know that, you know, I've always had a few pieces in mind, and for me, the medium was shotgun and barbed wire.
Ooh.
But I've never had the access to do these pieces I've always wanted to do.
We do have SAFTA.
We do have barbed wire here, and we do have access to shotguns, I'm sure.
Okay, if anything happens tonight, please send my body back to my parents.
I don't think anything,
tell them I love them.
I don't think anything's going to happen. We're still full from sausages.
Oh my god, dude. It tastes like glory.
Well, was it that you said when you walked into the kitchen here at the farm tonight?
It smells like I want heaven to taste. The only thing that we're missing tonight is, like, actually fighting to the death and being resurrected in Valhalla. I mean, seriously, it's mead, meat, and merriment.
So you did find your tribe, though. Oh,
yeah.
Here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I agree. I know that feeling. It's fascinating because, yeah, you're not the only visual artist here, but that's your primary medium.
Exactly.
In SAFTA.
And that's what I meant. Like, I don't want to say that anybody else here doesn't do visual arts. Mm-hmm. Like,
and that you don't do any written work or anything like that.
I really, really feel bad about running some of my fucking poems by everybody here, and they're just, like, looking at me like, the way that I looked at myself whenever I first came into SAFTA, it's automatically like, oh god, they're gonna judge me, oh, what am I doing? And then I read my work, and they're just like, okay, alright, that's nice, you need to change this around, and then I finally realized, I'm like, holy crap, this is actually what I've been trying to tell everybody else with their visual art.
Which is what?
Same thing. You need to switch this around, and I didn't really get why people would get offended whenever I told them that they might want to change some stuff.
Visual art has a, you know, stereotype about it of being very pretentious.
Oh, yeah.
Is it true?
We're not all a bunch of beret-wearing, bongo-beating douchebags in the art community.
So, like, it is a stereotype, then.
It, honestly, like, it's 50-50. I mean, there are ways to get lost in anything. I mean, like, if you do too much of something, you're going to be an asshole. You're going to overdose on anything. Like, let's say you work in Wall Street. You're making money, everything's going great. Then all of a sudden, you start doing too much, working too much. You lose your family, your kids, your wife, everything. Find a medium, you know? Like, whenever I find myself painting too much, and I start getting way too into it and losing myself again, I start writing again. I found my manuscript for my novel the other day. It's still as bad as I left it last time. But, I mean, I started cleaning it up. And, I mean, it's all about switching gears. It's about finding different avenues at different times and just finding that one spot at any given moment that's going to make you get out of any kind of emotional or mental or physical constipation that you're in. I hate to use constipation all the time, but it's a really good analogy. But you just start looking at life in this certain way of everything stagnant. Like, why am I feeling like this? My art should not make me feel like this. Read Stephen King in writing, or on writing, and apply it to you know, visual arts, written arts, performing arts. Like, it's not just one genre.
So don't get stagnant.
I'm going to say don't be afraid to try new things.
Don't be afraid to get weird with it.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I read whenever I was growing up, it's like the human condition is to be afraid. I refuse to believe that. The human condition is not to be afraid.
What is it?
We're always going to be a bunch of Cro-Magnon bastards. Like, I don't care how advanced we think we are. We're still going to be people climbing out of a cave every single day. I mean, we do it. Right now, whenever I leave here, I'm leaving a man-made cave.
Crawl into another cave.
Going back into my other cave. I'm avoiding, you know, the bigger predators on the interstate, which are 18-wheelers. I mean, like, it's different context, different thinking. And I'm not going to say keep on getting weird with it, but just don't be afraid to question anything. Don't be afraid to look at yourself and be like, okay, everybody thinks I'm strange because I do this, or I think this way, or I feel this way. That's what shuts people down. That's what we're conditioned as people. I mean, like, all my art teachers. Sure. One of them actually, and I hate to admit this, but like being ADD and high anxiety back in the day, I mean, like, I can actually technically qualify as mentally challenged in Tennessee under bylaws.
Okay. under state law.
And you're sitting here like, okay, what do I do with that? Like, my teacher in eighth grade, art teacher, whenever she didn't agree with my statement of why should I make lines your way, actually vocally told the entire class that I was mentally challenged in a not so nice way. And I mean, like, growing up with shit like that, you just sit there and you're like, okay, I can be a victim of this and I can let this rule me, which I did for a very long time. And I took probably about 6-7 years off art, and it killed me the entire time. Like, I was working warehouse jobs and everything else, and now that I'm back at it,
you're never gonna leave it again.
I've honestly realized I was never a victim. I just let it happen, you know? Like, never let anybody tell you that there isn't magic out there. Never let anybody tell you that what you're creating isn't genius. I mean, you could be reinventing the new potato masher. You could be like me and try to make a snowboard out of a skateboard with no trucks and then almost break your collarbone.
Is that a true story?
Yeah, actually that is. Welcome to Tennessee winter. But just don't be afraid of it. Get a couple of tubes of paint. I mean, I don't care if it's dollar store temper paint or if it's like $200 a bottle paint. I've seen people make some beautiful things out of nothing. And I've seen some people take every single thing that they can buy with their paycheck and make nothing because they didn't believe in it.
So is that the secret then, really? It's not necessarily about the materials. It's about you.
Yeah. It's about finding your own space. Finding your own weirdness.
Growing up, I was the weird kid. You know, everyone always called me. There you go, high five.
That's why we get along.
Exactly. Everybody thought I was the weird one. And, you know, I lived under that for 12 years in K-12. And I carried the scars emotionally from that. You know, I really, really took the shit from it. Mm-hmm. I get to college and I start hanging out with some people who are like, you're weird. You got to hang out with us more. And not in the bad way, like, you're so weird we want you around to, like, look at you like, whoa, that dude's weird. No, but, like, you're weird. You gotta chill with us because we're crazy too in our own way, and you fit well with this craziness. So I join a radio station, I meet an improv group, and I start to build this cadre of people who are like, dude, you're weird. What did you just do on the radio, like, last week? What was that promo you cut? Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine and I in the radio
New
station.
Year's.
We went to the New Year's party that we were at here at SAFTA and everything, where you basically challenged me when you found out I could do a Heston voice. You're like, no, you started off me on Randy Savage.
Snap into a garbage.
Two things like that. And then And then somehow I mixed it with Charlton Heston. I will not repeat what I said in it, but it did end up with, oh, I'm going to hell for this one. You know? But no, that challenging of, once I found that, wow, people actually, being the weird kid is not a bad thing, long and short of it is, I found it liberating. And suddenly I started finding, oh, wow, so this is how I can develop my humor. This is how I can make a room laugh. Because it's one thing to make your friends laugh. It's another to make a room of strangers start laughing. Yeah.
And it not be self-depreciating humor.
Although, if you're good at it, self-deprecating is very difficult.
As long as it's not your shtick.
It was mine in my 20s.
Honestly, like, I fell into a very, very big point in my life where I did that, and I feel terrible about it. I still do every once in a while, but not as much as I used to.
I don't feel as bad anymore because I realize just how much strength you have to do it, because the danger is if you keep doing it long enough, you start believing your own words.
And that's what I did.
I fell down that way too. Now I've learned the balance of where I can. Okay,
I'm starting to think that's why I'm doing the zombie series right now. It's like me resurrecting myself and just coming up and being like, oh, penance.
So now you're gonna do a series with shotguns and flamethrowers and such, and to counter the zombie bomb.
So basically, this is my last will and testament before we die tonight.
So what you do is you do a series, okay? Like one half of the wall are these zombie paintings going after, and on the other side are shotguns and flamethrowers, and all these are holding off the other side of the wall. And become like Plants vs. Zombies on your wall.
Oh, I'm just waiting for, like, blue lights in the background right now.
If Van Gogh drew zombies, what would they look like?
Don't tempt me, Frodo. Don't tempt me.
You should do a series of zombie paintings then in the style of different artists.
Oh, my God. Like, don't even get me started on Van Gogh. Holy crap. Like, okay, as a fellow nerd.
Oh, shit, I got you started.
No. This is the one and only thing that I will say about Van Gogh at length.
Okay.
One of my favorite things, and as a fellow nerd, like Doctor Who fans, there's this one beautiful episode, and like they come in on Van Gogh, and it's Amy Pond and the Doctor, and he's fighting something that nobody else can see, and the Doctor actually realizes, you know, it's an alien and everything else, but what I actually took from that was not only the camaraderie and everything else in the story of actual Van Gogh, or Van Gogh, if anybody else cares about pronunciation, was the one Doctor Who moment that will always make me tear up. I mean, Doctor Who will always make you tear up, but it actually really hit home to me, other than the Rings of Akhenaten, was whenever they actually took Vincent Van Gogh into the future, and he met a docent at a Vincent Van Gogh show at a gallery. And the entire time, like, cameras panning around, and it's him looking at his paintings in the future, and he looks at Bill Nye. Bill Nye is the docent, and he's like, Van Gogh was one of the most beautiful and tormented people on this planet. And he starts talking about him in this manner that you just, if you ever see your work outlive you, you want people to see that. And I mean, during your life, no matter who you are, you have points where you don't believe in yourself. But just seeing that and knowing that maybe one day, you know, like, I'm not going to be like narcissistic about it. I don't even feel that way, but I just want to make somebody feel. First time I ever laid eyes on an actual Van Gogh. I mean, it's one thing to look at a print and see all these starry nights and all the memes and everything else that's made out of it. But, like, whenever you actually see the brushstrokes, I mean, you can see the light playing off of it. You can feel every single second of it. I mean, like, if you've never read about Van Gogh, read about his life, read about his mind, read about his work, everything. I mean, there's a reason that man, there's a reason that he's actually a part of culture the way he is. But like him, Virginia Adams, Munch, Edward Munch, like The Kiss. Holy fuck. But, I mean, you look at all these artists and you wonder what's going through their mind. And, I mean, like, here lately, the one thing that I've wanted to do more than anything is actually bring live painting to Knoxville. A few months back, I was talking to my friend Jacinda, and her and Trevor actually talked me into going to the tattoo convention and doing a live painting. And I'm sitting here, brought all my stuff. Like, I didn't even have a handcart, so I had to handle probably about 80 pounds of equipment and spray paint, like, and two easels going, like, 2.5 miles down the road. And then, next thing you know, I get there. I spend, like, 20 minutes drinking a beer and just chilling out, trying to get my breath back. But I sit down with two pieces of cardboard, because I didn't have any canvas at that point, and I just start doing tester pieces. And I go outside, I set up my easel, and I just start live painting. Like, I didn't even think of it as live painting. I was just putting down a base coat, you know, getting everything done for my sketch. And I put in my headphones, put on my head mask, and I looked backwards 15 minutes afterwards, and I didn't even realize after I turned off Lamb of God that, like, 50 to 60 people were behind me, looking at me.
Just watching you.
They didn't know what to think. And, I mean, part of them thought that I was one of the tattoo artists. There were some of them that were just like, oh my God, what's this crazy motherfucker doing? And then some of them were just like, holy crap. You know, like, there's something going on. And that was whenever I realized, holy crap, you know, like, interactive art is not only amazing, but it's not like going to a gallery and just being like, hey, this person pops out a piece in 20 minutes. You know, like, why should I pay them $200? It's automatically, holy shit.
It's almost like performance art combined with visual art in one.
And, I mean, like, something that I really want to set up through SAFTA with, like, local tattoo artists, local regular artists, visual artists, sculptors, a couple other people. I mean, just, I've got a huge plan going on for this in Market Square. But I want to get 20 artists, 5-6 hours. I want to do a couple of GoPro cameras and switch it off to where every 15 minutes we switch GoPros with three different artists. And then one artist actually stands up and for 15 minutes on the mic talks to the crowd and tells them about their craft, how they got into art, what they love to do. You know, like, hey, we're going to break the stigma. We're not all, like, crazy people. Like, one thing that everybody doesn't realize, we're all crazy. Different kinds, different shades, different colors. But at the end of the day, same rainbow. But interacting with people like that, it's so liberating.
To break away from the idea that the artist is just a tortured soul sitting in their apartment. But no, they're human beings who... Yeah. Just, you know, this is what I do. Yeah. Check this out, you know?
And not just that. I think a lot of artists actually need to get back out there and do that. I think a lot of people, like myself, I've done it. I mean, you start getting into that rut where you're like, holy crap, you know, I'm doing nothing but angry. I'm doing nothing but art all the time. I don't get out. I don't associate with people. I don't have new experiences. And you lose yourself after a while.
How can you make art if you don't have new experiences constantly?
And everybody's different. I mean, like, some people, they do well alone. Some people, you know, they need social interaction. It's finding your own mixture. Make your own prescription. Be your own doctor. Art's a medicine, dude.
Dang. Preach it. Yeah, I think you're making convert to some of our listeners who've maybe never thought about it. I'm serious.
I said, in the name of Van Gogh.
Can I get a brush stroke?
Oh my God, dude.
Holy I'm sorry, God. I almost made you choke on a tall boy.
No. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Yeah.
Breathe. Art is about breathing.
I've got to said that. I've got to send that to somebody.
and tell them to listen to the episode. Like, they'll hear it in the context now of this whole thing.
Oh, trust me. It's a hashtag war. I hate to get into the whole hashtag thing, but we're actually trying to come up with original hashtags that nobody else will use, so we can only use them.
So that's become a hashtag now. Can I get a brush stroke?
Yeah.
No, there you go. I'm proud to have contributed to your art
in a weird sort of way. We'll put copyright.
You don't need to. But I give that one to you freely. The internet, now knows I said it anyway, so. I think if I were to get a tattoo, then I might commission you to make it for me.
Actually, I've got work on about 7 or 8 people.
Really?
Custom drawn, never tattooed.
So nobody's ever done, like, nobody's ever actually inked their skin with your work? But you've been commissioned to do them?
They have. I'm not the actual tattoo artist.
No.
So, I'm just
but
the artist.
But people have your art on
them?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Quite a few. Actually, I was at a couple of shops before they went under. One of them actually went under right before I got my apprenticeship, and the other one kind of muscled me out after I got it, so.
Gotcha. So you're getting around, though, in the area, though, with the art. Now your name's getting known and everything.
It's weird. It's so weird.
Does it make you uncomfortable?
Kind of, like, and not in a bad way. It's just, and I'm not used to it. I'm coming from a small community that's not used to art. If you don't have a trade, if you're not well off, you're automatically either outcast or they're like, go to school, learn a trade. And you're like, yeah, I've already got one.
I'm an artist.
Exactly. They're like, oh, that's cute. Here's some food stamps. Would you like this fruit basket that we got? Like, we know you're broke. It's like, really? That's what you think? I mean, like, I work just as much as you, but I come home and paint.
Like, what are you doing? Thing, you know?
Like, I'm sorry, you're a soccer player? Do you want me to give you acting lessons next time that you fall down and get a yellow card? Like, what's going on? It's kind of like that. You're just like, dude, what the fuck is this judgment? You know, like, automatically, I'm some dumb fuck who doesn't have a job.
I think you've proved here on the show that you are not a dumb fuck by any means. Actually, you have very deep thoughts here about art. I'm not kidding either. So it reminds me, because the only time I've ever even been close to a Van Gogh was at the MoMA in New York City.
Yeah.
And that's
still
where everybody
on my list.
But everybody flocks there. It was like, they all went there, and the crowd was like 7 deep to go see that. And I'm like, well, that's really cool and everything. I'm never going to get a chance, so I'm not going to fight that crowd. And so I turn the corner, and there's one of my favorite paintings in America, Christina's World, which just, like, breaks my heart to look at and get. It's one of those ones I get. Again, I hate to use the cliche. I'm not an artist, but I know no art, but I know what I like. But it's true sometimes visually with
that's
that.
That's what art. That's what's art.
You know, I got into it, and it's like I can lose myself in a painting like that and just wonder, you know, I know the backstory of it. What is she looking at? What is the artist thinking she's looking at? What am I looking at? Am I looking at her? Or am I looking at what she's looking?
Yeah.
And you get lost in it, and I think there's something so beautiful about doing that.
Have you ever watched Amelie?
Not yet. It's on my Netflix queue.
Whenever you watch Amelie, one of my favorite parts, The Glass Man. Not going to give anything away. No spoilers. One of my favorite movies of all time. This guy paints Landing of the Boating Party, I think it is, every year. Trying to get the characters down. Amazing artist. But there's one person that he cannot capture the way they look. And it's always the girl who's eating the hand or eating the morals and everything else. And he contemplates over it with Amelie, and she finds herself in that character. That is one of the truest things I can say about art, is that you can mostly tell people, or tell a lot about people, and they can tell a lot about themselves, about the art that they look at, that they respect, that they like, that they feel, that they connect with. Like, most of my stuff, I would really hate to be psychoanalyzed. I mean, like, I'm a huge Geiger fan, but I mean, like, a lot of it's respect to line work and everything else, and I mean, like, I can connect with so many pieces, and artists and color work and spectrums and like any other technological terms that you can put with it. But whenever it comes down to it, like, if it doesn't make you feel, ask yourself why not. If it makes you feel, ask yourself why. If it makes you feel indifferent, ask yourself, why am I not feeling more? Art should make you feel something. I'm not just going to sit here and look at, you know, like, this piece on the wall right here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going to sit here and be like, okay, you know, like, maybe the watercolor over here isn't looking the way that I want it. But I'll tell you right now, this area right here and this right here, I mean, like, it's confusion, but at the same time, it's awesome. Like, yes, this piece makes me feel at some point. Like,
in some way.
Don't look at the entire picture. Look at little areas, and then absorb it. The entire thing.
Will do.
Snap judgments. Don't need to.
Chris, we are almost out of time, man.
Hey, no worries, bro.
Told you, it goes by fast on this, you know? It goes by fast. So, before we go, though, what do you got coming up? You got more prints coming out and everything? Where can the folks also find you online? Check out your work and such.
I'm actually finally about to set up a Etsy shop. Not quite sure about the name, but it's probably going to be Weird Beard Studios. Facebook, Weird Beard Studios. Also, Chris, and I hate this, I had to differentiate myself from every single Chris Johnson on the planet. Chris.thejuggernaut.johnson on Facebook. That's my personal page. And hopefully in the next couple months, I'm going to get my website up.
And when you do, shoot us the link. We'll post
do,
it for
brother.
Folks. All right.
Will do.
Chris, it has been a pleasure to have you, man. You know, it's you awesome know. Having you here
it's
on this
family.
Program. Yeah. And let's go work off those sausages.
Something about shotguns.
Oh, yeah, there was a shotgun thing we got to do and all
shotguns,
that.
Shotguns, barbed wire, fun. It's like a night of Barbarella.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.